You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, along with my co-host, Adam Markowitz. I don't have any echo. Witz.
I didn't get in the Hall of Fame this year.
Oh, we tried. Man.
We tried hard.
I had you 12th on my list of 10.
Man, we're getting there.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. Hall of Fame. We have some very interesting stuff, too. But I think first and foremost what we're going to talk about, Adam, is something that you had brought up in one of your articles that you released it on Sunday. It finally became official via the league on Tuesday that the league has taken over the Las Vegas Outlaws and the New Orleans Voodoo.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad state of affairs right now in the Arena Football League due to the fact that two of the 12 teams are now under league ownership. We kind of thought this crap was going to end when the Jerry Kurz era came to a close, but alas, Scott Butera's first season is kind of marred by this as well. I guess it shouldn't be all that much of a surprise. Las Vegas was kind of rushed into things this year, and New Orleans has been known as sort of a train wreck over the course of, really, ever since Dan Newman took over the team and didn't move, but closed up shop with Shreveport and
right.
Moved the Battle Wings down to New Orleans. So, yeah, those two teams are now under league control, which it depends. You know, this is where we're going to see how Scott Butera reacts to things. Remember that the league said something, which is more impressive than, you know, what we saw in the past when things like this happened, when the league just kind of denied that bad things were happening.
Right.
But this is where we're also going to see his sphere of influence and whether he can pull in an owner, especially from a city that he, you know, basically helped build in essence in Las Vegas. His thing is gambling casinos. He's built in Vegas. He has an office in Las Vegas. You know, if anybody can find somebody in Las Vegas to fork up $2 or $3 million to be able to purchase a team, you'd figure it'd be him.
Right.
So I think it's an interesting time with those two teams. I don't know what's coming. I think the Voodoo are in a lot. I think both these teams are in a lot of trouble. I think if you were a betting man, and hey, I am.
Oh, surprise! Yes,
that neither of these teams will be back next year. Even though I know we've heard about, hey, there's prospective owners. Well, we've heard there's prospective owners for so many cities,
right,
over the years, to the point that, look, I've kind of become immune to that news. Show me when somebody's actually willing to fork up some money, because the history will tell you, the AFL is pretty much struck out when it's come to trying to place owners for teams who have been taken over by the league. Again, I'm willing to give Scott Butera the benefit of the doubt for now and see what his record is 0-0. We'll see how he does here. The AFL since 2010 was 1-8 in teams that they had taken over or at least aided, over the course of a season, that being last year,
yeah,
with the Orlando Predators when David Siegel purchased the team.
Well, when you talk about that, and it's a very good point you bring up about the David Siegel thing, I mean, what would you say would be the percentages that either one of these two franchises, I know you said they won't be back, but I mean, if we were to give any of them a percentage on possibly getting a new ownership, because we have heard there seem to be rumors abound that at least New Orleans, we've not heard anything about Las Vegas. Percentage-wise, what do you think? I mean, for either of these teams, I mean, if Massey ratings can do stuff on how these percentage that these teams are going to win, if we were to give a Markowitz rating, what would it be when it comes to these teams?
What were our TV ratings for the Sabercats Voodoo game?
0.01.
That's about
sorry, a 0.1.
That's about right. There's slightly better chance than 0.1%, but it doesn't look good, and the one thing I will tell you will not happen next year is these two teams will not kick off without owners. We will not have a Chicago Rush situation. I will guarantee you that.
No. That after going through that and what seems to be that Commissioner Butera is going through and making the changes that he wants to, so far, I'm sure there's going to be some more stuff in the off season. Now, you also came out with something when it came to the voodoo itself and how this franchise should be saved. For those who didn't happen to read it, I mean, what are your reasonings that why should they be saved compared to the Las Vegas Outlaws?
Well, Las Vegas has never worked for sports whatsoever. Name me one successful team in the history of Las Vegas sports.
Pro sports.
Yeah, pro sports.
Other than the 51s?
That's all they've got of the 51s. They've had an ECHL team fold. They've had you know, two AFL teams move.
Right.
You know, they've never ventured putting the NFL there, the NBA, the NHL. They've never had any of that stuff. There's a reason for that. And the argument for Las Vegas is a great city. I went there for the first time this year. I think it's a phenomenal, phenomenal place. It's built for tourists. It's not built for sports. Tourists are not going to be season ticket holders, obviously. That would be your locals. If you're going to have locals, you can't put the stuff on the strip because the locals don't want to go to the strip.
I know. And now, where's the new arena located? Is it?
It's off of the strip.
Just off of the strip, not as far as where the Thomas and Mack is, right?
Further from the strip than the Thomas and Mack, if I remember right.
Oh, okay.
Which is good. The further you can get it out of town, the better.
Yeah.
So, but the reason that I think, that's why Vegas won't work, because Vegas has never worked for anything, ever. The reason that New Orleans can and should work is because you're in the South. I don't care what city that you put a football team in. It should work in the South.
Right.
I understand your smaller markets. You know, if you, for example, put a team in Baton Rouge, no, that wouldn't work. Yes, you will cram 85,000 people in a Tiger Stadium for an LSU game in Baton Rouge, where there's a big difference between LSU college football and AFL voodoo quasi sort of professional football. Yeah, it's professional football.
Well, yeah, NCAA in itself is a whole.
That's a major league in and of itself.
Exactly, exactly. And it's true. Think about all the teams that have come and gone through, the football teams alone that have come through Vegas. You have the Las Vegas Posse of the CFL. You have the other Las Vegas Outlaws of the XFL. You have both versions of the Gladiators. You got...
The Sting.
Huh?
Sting.
And then the Sting. What?
Old school AFL team, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah, so... they talk about, NHL going to Vegas. Come on!
They might, but they won't last. But, you know, the
look at
But New Orleans should work, and it has worked. It even wasn't that bad when it was the New Orleans Knights. When you really want to, you know, want to think about it, the New Orleans Knights drew almost 8,000 fans a game.
Right.
If the Voodoo drew almost 8,000 fans a game, Dan Newman would still have himself a team. But they don't. And part of the reason they don't is because they don't advertise whatsoever. They have a staff of literally four people, none of which are above the age of 30, are running a football team. I take that back. None of which are above the age of 35 are running a professional football team.
Right.
There's no experience whatsoever in this franchise, and nobody around town even knows that they exist anymore. And even when they do, there's so many hardened fans who just hate Dan Newman and the way that he ran this team, and I can't blame them. They've sucked ever since they've come back into existence. They haven't won, and they don't, frankly, try to win that hard.
Right.
No team tries to lose, but they don't have the resources to go out there and find players. They basically have to more or less just get them on their own.
Something that you mentioned to me, and I think it readily said, you told me, and I don't think anybody has heard this yet. So anybody who happened to be listening to watching Meerkat or the podcast this week may find out for the first time, because I haven't seen anything. You heard something over the radio when it came to the Voodoo. This for their home game is coming out this week.
They're not saying every ticket is free, but they're saying that they've got a block of 40. I believe the number was 4,600. It's over 4,000 tickets that have been, quote, donated. So, for all intents and purposes, they're giving away every ticket in the house, and I don't think that includes the 2,000 tickets that we know Pope Clown's giving away at Sweet Things and Grill. So, you know, you could do the math. The place only holds about 7,000 in the lower bowl, and they've
right.
given away 6,600 tickets. You can kind of do the math, and they're advertising that you can get up to 20 tickets at one time.
Okay. 20 tickets, wow. So they're trying to, just in case if this is the last hurrah, which it might be, they're trying to go out with at least a half-decent lower bowl crowd.
Well, I mean, what's I think this is dangerous. I mean, this is probably league marketing trying to prove to an investor that, hey, we could really put 10,000 people in this place or 7,000 people in this place or whatever
right.
the case is.
Right.
What if they don't? What if they only put 2,000 people in there again? Then what?
Do they dare even think about? I mean, if they have a new owner, a potential new owner, will this team A person keep the team in New Orleans, and B will they'd have to rebrand them again?
Oh, absolutely, you have to rebrand. The Voodoo name is crap now in New Orleans. You have to rebrand.
And it's such a good brand though, good name. But, yeah.
But it's a murdered name. It's a murdered brand.
Right. I know. It's going to be very...
Man, do I miss 16,000 people in the graveyard.
Oh, I know. Me too.
I miss 16,000 people anywhere.
Well, you had 15 last week in Tampa, and that was almost... That was, I'm saying, a pretty legitimate 15.
That was a great crowd. But if you add all of New Orleans people up this year, you don't have 15. And I'm not exaggerating by that much.
Oh, you mean real numbers versus?
Yeah, I mean like actual butts in seats.
Right. It's going to be interesting to say the least. Now, kudos to the league for putting out a PR about it. It was short and sweet. I really didn't expect anything less. You know what I mean? So
I also didn't expect anything more, but I'm happy that they said something.
Yes.
I am happy that they said something.
Yes, I am too. Yeah. And, you know, Commissioner Butera, let it be known what he wants to do, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah. So kudos to the league for putting it out. It's a part of transparency. Stuff that we haven't seen before, we have and haven't seen before in the past. So, yeah. But we got a long way to go, don't we, Adam?
Got a long way to go. There is a tremendous uphill battle for this league right now, especially if they're down to just 10 owners, which is scary.
Yeah. Which I'm hoping is not going to be the case. Let you guys know we actually do have an interview this week. It's another reason why we weren't able to do the stuff on YouTube like we wanted to. And I thought it went well. Our interview this week is with Portland quarterback Kyle Rowley. And we will play his interview a little bit later. But staying in the West, staying on the West Coast there, Adam. It's funny, we're talking about Vegas, talking about New Orleans, something that happened in Vegas a few weeks ago. Well, at least half, there have been, I guess we could say, half of a resolution? is that fair to say?
Sure.
Why not, right?
Yeah.
For anybody who doesn't remember, there were the two Shock players that were basically caught red-handed on video, on security tape while they were in a Vegas hotel. Basically, I don't know if we can call them pickpockets. I don't know if we can... What do you...
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, they're pickpockets. They were suspended. You know, they were suspended. One was dropped. Found out today via the spokesman review that the Shock reinstated Samuel Charles after a $500 fine and counseling. Now, being that I live in Canada, I read this thing here, and I have never, ever heard of this type of stuff here, Adam. Okay, I can understand he forfeited a $500 bond. Okay, there's your $500 fine. But attending petty, did it say petit? I think they meant to say petite. What is it? P-E-T-I-T? I thought it was petty larceny. Is that how it's pronounced?
I mean, I'd have to read the context.
But he goes, Charles forfeited a $500 bond and attended petty larceny counseling. As a result, his misdemeanor charge has been dismissed. Now, the other player, Mark Jackson, was released from the team last week, and he's facing a hearing on Thursday where his attorney will attempt to have his arrest warrant quashed. Based on what?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you were caught on tape. Yes, you were arrested.
What's next? Is somebody going to tell me that DeAndre Johnson didn't slug that girl?
Yeah. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. I guess you know, you got to pay your attorney to do something.
I guess so. Now, we've had issues in the Arena Football League before when it comes to players getting into trouble. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
What's your spin on this, if any? We've gone from Bobby Scipio, we've had murder, DUIs, we've had being accused of murder. I could go on and on, because we can.
I can't think of anything else. This is just weird, and to tell you the truth, if I'm the shock, I don't want this guy back. I don't care how good this guy is. He can't be that great. We'll start there.
Okay.
He cannot possibly be that great. It's, you know, isn't there something to be said about branding? And, like, you don't want to be associated with criminals, especially when you could just go get another guy who's probably got basically the same talent level off the streets.
Right, yeah.
We're doing all right without him, I guess. Maybe not. I mean, they really haven't been winning much, but you get the point.
I get the point. By the way, Zach on our Meerkat and on Twitter, he basically goes, counseling for stealing, ? I agree, same thing. Adam, you know what? I know you really, really liked that chocolate bar, and I know you took it, but you know what? I'm just going to fine you $500, and you got to go to traffic court. That's basically what it's like. That's basically what you're saying.
An expensive chocolate bar.
You know, I've never heard of this type of thing. Petty larceny? I thought you got... It's like shoplifting. Seems that everybody, you know, everybody... Shoplifting seems to be a pretty serious offense when we see the stuff, you know, whether it be a show up on YouTube, blah, 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 blah. But going back to, yeah, is it really worth for him to stay with the team? Are they really going to give him a second chance, Adam? Or are they going to move him to the infamous inactive list?
That's possible. I don't know what else to say about this. This is a dumb story.
I think Samuel Charles might have been one of the ones, if I remember reading that. He was one of the ones that was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that he may have not been as involved in it as possible, as much as they said he was, even though the tapes, you know what, when it comes to going to the tape, Adam, you and I both know, anybody who watches sports know, it can be depending on the advantage that you have, right?
Look, the AFL didn't have a good history of reviews, so I don't know. I don't know what the Shock are doing putzing around with this guy if they want him back. I don't even really care. Tell you the truth, I don't even really care if he's guilty or innocent. Just the fact that his name is associated with this, and anytime you Google this guy's name for the rest of his career, this is all you're going to see.
Right.
It's not worth it. I mean, I understand we live in a country of second chances and all that, but, I mean,
Or third, or fourth, or fifth.
I mean, if this guy lived in Canada, they would have taken away his visa and thrown him out of the country.
Petty larceny? Possible. Yeah. I don't see why. Yeah. It's true. Let's see. Well, we always have a lot more to talk about. So what we're going to do first is we're going to play the interview for you guys that we had this week with Kyle Rowley. And when we get back, we'll have a couple more segments, talk about the games coming up this week. We'll do just all that right after we listen to the interview. Enjoy. And on the line with us now, we have a five-year AFL veteran quarterback. He's also an Arena Bowl champion back in 2010. Don't know who he is? Well, you should. Starting quarterback for the Portland Thunder, Kyle Rowley. Thanks for joining us, Kyle.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
First, I think congratulations are in order. You guys, I think, would probably – I think we could say you came off one of the biggest home victories of the Thunder's short life and I think probably of the team's history also. I mean, what a win by you guys last week over the Jacksonville Sharks.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I think we finally put together a solid four quarters of football. We've got some guys that have come in as of late that are really made a difference. And, I thought we played good ball on Saturday.
It's a little bit of a challenge, I'm sure, and I wanted to ask you about this specifically. Sometimes there are some changes within the organization. And just this past year, last year, when you were with the Thunder, you had Coach Matt Salk as your head coach. And this year, Thunder decided to make a change and brought in longtime AFL veteran player. What hasn't he done in this league? Mike Hoensey. How is the transition going from Matt Salk to Mike Hoensey as a head coach?
It's been good. I obviously came, you know, I was traded here technically, but, you know, I was aware of what was the movement that was happening when I was in Jacksonville, and I wanted to land in Portland last year because I knew Coach Salk was out here. We've got a history where, you know, we've won an Arena Bowl. And so that's why I came out here. And then, you know, with him leaving or being let go, didn't really know what was going to happen. Obviously they announced Coach Hoensey soon after. Mm-hmm. And, I'd always heard good things. I had, I spoke with him in passing, in years past, but, didn't really know much about him. So, you know, the thing I did was came up during the off season to get to know him, to get to know what he wanted, expected out of me, thought of me. And, what he basically thought was, I want to see what you got, and I want to work hard in the off season, and we'll do it that way. So I just came out here, threw with him, not with him, but, you know, I would come in, I would consult with him, and basically go out with the quarterbacks, and we just worked hard all off season. So it's been good. I mean, I like his professionalism. He's got a system. He keeps the guys in order, you know, and guys know what to expect. So it's been a good transition.
Were there any differences, a little bit things that were harder to get used to compared to Coach Salk and Coach Hoensey, or is it about the same when it came to coaching styles or playbooks, et cetera?
They're very different. You know, obviously this, you know, this game, there's only so much you can do on offense. There's only so many route combinations. Coach Hoensey's a lot more hands-on. Mm-hmm. With his quarterbacks, he wants your input. He'll adjust things according to your likes and dislikes. Coach Salk's a little bit more stern about how he wants things done. He's got an offense that he wants run, and you're going to do that, or he's going to find someone else to do it. And I don't have a problem with either styles. I'm kind of one of the guys that believes fall in line. Listen to your coaches. Mm-hmm. Listen to the leaders. There's a pecking order for a reason, and you know. Armies can win in different ways, you know, except when they're in disarray. So, they're definitely different, but I've enjoyed playing for both of them.
Just this past week, you passed the 50 passing touchdown mark for the fourth year in your career, first time in your career. It's been a little bit of a challenge this year for you being the quarterback for the Portland Thunder. What was it like? I mean, you had the starting job. I think you were not the starter for a little while. I know Darren Thomas was starting. I know for those who don't know, what is it like to be a starter at the beginning of a season? All of a sudden, something interrupts that, and then you and not and you don't have to necessarily gain back or win back your starting position. What was it like for you personally to be able to say, you know what, I need to make sure that I can show the team that I can be their starting quarterback?
Yeah, well, you know, first and foremost, I mean, just bluntly,
yeah,
I don't believe I ever lost any job to anyone out here.
Okay.
But, yeah, at certain times, if things aren't going right, changes are made at different positions. And sometimes, like I said, I'm a system guy. If the coach says do something, I'm going to do it. That doesn't mean I'm not going to show up the next day at practice and, you know, out quarterback the guy that I've been out quarterbacking every other day. And,
right.
I'm not referring specifically to him. I'm just saying
right.
I'm not going to show up and not act like the starter because I'm not the starter.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's a little bit strange to be a veteran and, you know, to have a resume and have them trying different things. But sometimes, you know, you have to do that because it's a quarterback-driven league. So if you're not winning, you can't just bring in a whole new roster. You have to try things, tinker with things, see who the team's responding to, and I'm fine with that. Throughout my career, I've always ended up back on the field. So as a veteran, you know, it probably would have haunted me a little bit more if I was, you know, in my first or second year, and, you know, I would have been shouting, this isn't fair, you know. But I want to be more of a team player this deep in my career, and I think Darren Thomas has a lot of potential. So that's how I tried to deal with it. I tried to support him while he was out there and just be ready knowing I was going to be back on the field.
Now, you talk about being a team player. Just looking at what you and your receiving corps has done this year has been you seem to have a great repertoire with all of your wide receivers. I mean, look at Vicon Lacy. You look at Jared Perry, Jamar Howard. How are you guys able to keep on such the same page all this time? I mean, it's Perry alone, almost 1,000 yards and 22 touchdowns.
Yeah, I lost you for a second there. You say with all the transitions that are happening?
No, just being a team itself, team player itself, how you and your fellow teammates and especially wide receivers have been able to click so well this year.
Yeah, I think we're really hitting our stride right now. I've said this, you know, especially the last week or two, that I think Jared Perry added another dimension to our offense. We were always real good hitting the short, medium, interim passes, and, you know, even converting in the red zone. But we needed that deep threat, and then Jared really brought that to us. And once you have that, things start to open up in the middle, and I was able to get Lacy the ball a lot more across the middle, and he had running room. He's putting his hand on people's helmets now instead of getting hit right when he makes his break.
Right.
You know, slants start to come open because they're helping on corners. So that, I really give him a lot of credit for that. But, you know, I think Coach Holmesy fosters an environment where we're allowed to have input. You know, the receivers have a lot of input in our meetings, and that helps us be on the same page. When you're always talking and you're allowed to talk in the meetings, you start to see where guys expect the ball, what they were thinking on certain plays. And, you know, it's a long season, so, you know, with I think only, what, 5 games left in the regular season, we've played a lot of football together. And we're starting to really have to build a chemistry.
And not only just you and the wide receivers, I'm sure I can't go and, you know, do the interview without asking you about Dwayne Brooks. What?
Yeah.
Wow. If anybody who has seen him return this year, I mean, he is on the verge of tying the league record, you know, for most kickoff return touchdowns in a season. What's it like? I think it's the best way to ask you, Kyle. What's it like watching him return something to the house?
I mean, it's great. I mean, it takes a lot of pressure off us at times, you know, especially in those back and forth battles. You know, all right, they scored again. We got to score again. Then all of a sudden you look out and you're like, oh, he already did it for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's been nice because, you know, for that same reason, it takes pressure off your offense. But, you know, he's a great story because, you know, he was on the fringe of being released, you know, in and out, in and off the roster. And, just comes back out with a great attitude, took me aside and said, you know, hey, work with me. I need to have a great practice today. And it's like when someone comes out and says, I want to have a great practice today, they're not even talking about the game.
Right.
That gives me shivers up my spine because they start, you know, they're understanding that every day matters. I always say you are who you are every single day, you know, especially in football because you have a lot more practices than you have games. You're not just the guy you are on game day. And his attitude's been great. And I said to the guys, I said, you know, we can become the best offense in the league any day we want to.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and I looked at Dwayne. I said, look at Dwayne. He became the best kick returner in AFL history just one day because he decided he wanted to be it.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about him. I think he just decided that he was going to turn it on, and he never looked back.
Now, a lot of people say, you know, oh, it's all about what a team actually is and how they show in the standings. This year, it really doesn't matter, Kyle, because, you know, at 4-10, you guys are still in the hunt for the playoffs. Coming into this week's game versus San Jose is going to be, I'm sure, a very big challenge. But, as you have seen this season, San Jose can be beaten. What are you and the other players and Coach Holmesy trying to do to go into San Jose, go into the Cats lair, and pull off probably one of the second biggest wins in league history this year?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, a few weeks back, I'm watching my close friend Danny Southwick, you know, put it to them and come out of there with a win when no one even knew LA had the ability to beat anyone
mm-hmm.
in this league. So, you know, congrats to him for doing that, and I think that opened a lot of people's eyes around the league. You know, with that said, you know, he kind of brought it to my attention. He said, you got to look at San Jose's defense, and you guys put up, I think we put up 45, 48 points. He goes, that's probably the most points anyone's put up against San Jose. So don't think we got stopped three times. Think the rest of the league gets stopped 5 to 6 times on average against San Jose. So
mm-hmm.
we feel pretty good about what we've done against San Jose,
mm-hmm.
Up to this point. I think there's only two teams that have put up more points than the Thunder have on their defense. They got a great defense. They know where, how to press guys, how to disrupt the timing. But, you know, right now we're basically looking at the film, looking at our pass game against them, seeing what we did wrong there, and seeing, you know, where their weaknesses are. Every team's got a weakness. You can only have strength in so many spots.
Right.
It's really just about moving pieces around.
All right. I mean, any other particular, I don't know, you don't want to give them too many specifics, obviously, give away your game plan, but anything that Coach Hohensee has let you guys know to try to get you guys up?
You know, to San Jose's credit, I think they play a style of defense that is conducive to winning. You know,
if
I were defense coordinator in this league, I'd do a lot of what they're doing. Get a good middle guy, and then who frees up your outside guys to press at times and things like that. You know, one of the things we believe is that we're going to move the ball up and down the field. So, you know, we're just trying to have some weapons that we can unveil for them in the red zone. We
mm-hmm.
want to make sure we're scoring on every drive or a high percentage of drives.
Right.
And that involves being a little bit creative down there. I'm not too creative, just showing them things that they're not necessarily – seeing on film week in and week out from us.
Right, right. Now, before we let you go, I have to at least ask. It seems that the city of Portland, ever since the Thunder has returned, has been very supportive of the Thunder organization. What's it like being a member of the Thunder organization and their ownership group? And then we got to talk about the fans of Portland.
I'll talk about the fans first. I think the fans have been great. I think we even had a record attendance a few weeks back at a time where you wouldn't really expect that because we had dropped a few games. But, the fans are great. And I think, you know, I always think if you win more games, you get more fans. And that's the reward for it. And then you get more fans, it helps you win more games.
Mm-hmm.
So, we got to do our part in, showing them there's a reason to come out to these games. Terry Embert's been great. You know, this is only his second year in arena football, and I think he picked up the game faster than anyone I've seen. I think he is one of the better owners as far as understanding the concept of like, make your players comfortable,
mm-hmm.
and they'll reward you for it. So I appreciate everything he's done on that front. It's been good. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to wrap it up, but I just want to add,
sure.
You know, I give Darren Thomas a lot of credit because he was thrown into a tough environment out here,
mm-hmm.
and he's got, you know, one of the same injuries I had last year. He's battling back. I see him in rehab in the training room every day, and he's a fighter and always been a great teammate. So, you know, I didn't know how it came off, but, you know, what I was saying about him, but I have a lot of respect for the guy.
Okay. Oh, no, I completely understand. Oh, you know what? Somebody just mentioned something to me real quick, and I have to ask. So you scored a touchdown last week, Kyle. What was it like when it was raining teddy bears?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because they warned us about that in practice. They said after we score our first touchdown, they're going to be throwing thousands of teddy bears out on the field, we might have a 15-minute break. And I completely forgot. You know, you're in the course of the game trying to get in the end zone.
Yeah.
And we ran a couple plays. I think it came down a third or fourth down, and we finally got in. And then I was like, what the – you know, I was like, oh, yeah, this is what they talked about. But for me, it was a nice little break. We got to take a breather on the sideline. But, yeah, it was a little bit eerie just having them rain down on you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, all the best to you this week, Kyle. We greatly appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule to talking with us this week.
Hey, I really appreciate what you guys do over there. I've always been a fan, so you know, keep it up.
And we want to thank Kyle for joining this week, obviously, Adam. Very interesting, you know, mindset going into the game this week versus the San Jose SaberCats. It can't be easy, can it?
Well, can't be easy, but, you know, what do they have to lose? If they get beaten by 50, everybody pretty much expected them to be beaten by 50. But, you know, San Jose has looked a little more beatable in recent weeks. You know, New Orleans stayed a lot closer than most figured they were going to stay against them. We're only a few weeks removed from L.A., you know, pulling off the upset. Yeah, Vegas got its butt kicked by San Jose. But, you know, SaberCats can't take their foot off the gas pedal because they know what's right behind them. You know, objects in rearview mirror closer than they appear, and that, you know, object, of course, being the Arizona Rattlers, and if that game happens to be lost down the line here next week, you know, anything can happen in this conference. All of a sudden, they could be stuck going on the road to Arizona, so they can't take their foot off the gas pedal, and Portland knows, look, every game means something at this point.
Yeah.
And you gotta think it's gonna take at least 5 to get in the playoffs, if not 6, maybe even 7. I guess 6 will get the job done.
Well, this is one question I want to ask you, and I was looking at the playoff, you know, the playoff scenarios that the league had released today, and I saw the amount of wins and losses that each of these teams had. Do you see the possibility of there only being a grand total of 3 teams with winning records making the playoffs?
Yeah. Well, I mean, possibility, yes. Probability, no. I think Orlando will finish with an above 500 record, but okay. I think it's very reasonable that everyone else finishes at or below 500. I don't think you'll only. I think Jacksonville probably. I guess Jacksonville is going to finish at 500, and everybody else, yeah, everybody else in the league is going to fit. All the rest of the 8 teams will finish below 500.
Wow.
I'm sorry, 7 teams.
So, yeah, yeah. Okay. It's just I've looked at that and I was like, man, what did. Doesn't, yeah, you like my writing.
The fact of the matter is, the only thing that's saving more teams from not being below 500 is the fact that LA was so damn bad for so long. Or there'd be more teams under 500 because those 3 teams at the top have just completely run away from everybody else.
That's true.
This is worse than it was back in 2011 when Jacksonville and Arizona ran away from everybody else.
Right.
This is Arizona, San Jose, and Philadelphia. You got to remember, if Nick DeVila didn't get hurt,
right,
Arizona would be undefeated right now.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Let me see here. We're talking about this story earlier this week, and I don't know if you saw it, and I wanted your opinion. It was a story on Joe Windham, talking about, you know, basically how he went from $400 to $4,000 a day, a week, or whatever it was. But that was, you know, the story was good. It explained his entire history within the Arena Football League, etc., and how he got involved with the KISS. Now, one thing that stood out quite a bit, and a lot of people have been talking about, it's made quite a buzz on the internet, is a particular claim that was by the AFL-PU's executive director, Ivan Soto. And basically the claim, Adam, was, and if anybody who hadn't listened or read it, he was claiming, or through the reporter claimed that each team made $2 million.
Well, it's an averaged $2 million.
Yes. Yeah. Now, before I read what the actual quote was, to set the record straight, when you first saw that, what was your first thought, though?
Well, I knew what he meant. I mean, I know he meant $2 million in gross revenue. A, I'm an accountant, and B,
right,
I know, you know, obviously some things about some of the books of not the direct information about these books, but I've spoken to people who have really good ideas as to how much money their teams, you know, across the country really do make. $2 million in revenue is, about right.
Yeah.
For AFL teams.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, I would say they all. And let me restate this before I go there. There are 10 owners who probably fall somewhere between $1.5 million and $3 million in revenue on an annual basis.
Okay.
There are two owners that I'd bet are under $1 million.
Okay. Now, let me, before you continue, here's the actual quote. Because I will admit, she paraphrased, and I think the way that the quote was mentioned is also a little bit misleading. Here's the quote itself. The estimate on the league's revenue, we believe, is an average of approximately $2 million per team per year, and that wouldn't include any national sponsorship or the value of the barter agreements, etc., that may be in place. We believe that the revenue projection is in the arena based on financial information such as ticket sales and other related financial information obtained through various sources. This is where he goes to say it is possible for some teams to be making over $2 million, some are under. So the way that it seems, it was the paraphrase actually made it seem that it was just $2 million flat, as you said, without taking into account any of the costs, whether it be, you know, rentals, revenue, rentals, players, housing, and on and on and on, right?
Paying for other teams who the league owns.
Well, that too, yeah. Team dues, their dues, other teams' dues. I know, it's just crazy. As far as I think I heard this week that there was a call for money this past week for these teams to help pay the, I guess, what, you know, what's happening. And, you know, hearing also this week that there's, you know, how did Vegas get to Los Angeles this week?
Well, Arizona, but
sorry, to Arizona this week.
And they bust.
And they bust.
That is a 5-hour bus ride.
I mean, I've done it from Vegas to the Grand Canyon to stay there for a grand total of 2 hours and then having to get back. But these are some our big football players going on a coach bus, and you and I heard this, and I think the first thing that we thought was cost cutting is starting immediately, isn't it?
Well, no, the first thought that I had is Ivan Soto is going to have a fit about this because this is not part of the collective bargaining agreement. I don't remember what the mileage is. I'd have to go back and look, but it's not 4.5 hours on a bus. That's
right.
Not acceptable.
Right, and that's actually just what you reminded me of, is checking to see what it actually says in the collective bargaining agreement, because there is a clause for when it comes to travel. But I don't know if you can access that while we're talking here and maybe bring it up. I don't know if you have access to it. It's on the league webpage if you don't have it.
Too much jargon to go through while I'm trying to do something else.
That's, yeah.
And trying to podcast and read through that thing is yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Good point. But so now everybody knows. I mean, the quote that was given to the OC Register was actually a little bit longer than what I read. But to get to the gist of what was said, that is what Ivan said initially, and it was paraphrased, and it was the way that it was paraphrased was misleading. I think we could say right away, right?
Yeah, but that's what reporters do. There's a reason that I don't paraphrase anyone. I just quote them.
Yeah.
Because things can get taken out of context in a real hurry. I mean, I can understand how a layman would read this and go, oh, these teams, you know, these owners are making $2 million a year. Well,
right.
No, they're not.
No.
Or yes, they are, but they may be spending $3 million a year. So, you know, I also wonder if Ivan Soto means that the median team is making $2 million as opposed to the average team making $2 million. I have a hard time believing that the average team is making $2 million when you have teams that I can tell you without much doubt there are at least two franchises that are not going to make $1 million this year.
Gee, I think the league just took over two of them.
Wonder who those two teams are. But
New Vegas and Lost New Orleans, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So
the outdo.
It sounds like a soda.
Yeah.
You tired of Mountain Dew? Get outdo. Yeah, dumb. Sorry. Something I've not been able to get any information on this, and I was hoping to update everybody before we were doing the podcast this week. I may have to follow up accordingly if I can get some information on the record. Recently, Adam, the San Jose SaberCats went ahead and put out a press release stating that they have started up their new SaberCats.tv streaming service. And that's exactly what it is. This is a team that constantly has had ESPN on, you know, if you're watching the game on ESPN3, it comes up at, you know, they've had more of, stay tuned, something's wrong with our stream, or something to that effect. They've had that more in the past 2.5 years than there have been normal home games shown on ESPN3. Hearing this really made me start to think, and my first question, Adam, was this, and I don't know how you were thinking about what we thought about this was, but mine was, wait a minute, doesn't the league have an agreement with ESPN3 to stream all games? That was my first question. My second question was, are these games that are being streamed going to be shown on ESPN3?
I assumed they were going to use SaberCats TV as a way to make sure that ESPN3 has something to pick up. That was my best guess.
Right.
This is totally irrelevant to me. This is Silicon Valley. You should be able to figure out how to stream a goddamn game on ESPN3.
Right, and it's not that the SAP Center is that old. It's not like, hell. No, you've been to
Sharks game.
Yeah, and they had internet at the Blaisdell Arena in Hawaii. They had somewhat internet.
They didn't have internet at the
place. No, nothing. But it was right in Beijing. Everything went. It's text messaging.
Was literally wired back to trucks.
So, there are a lot of older places that have better internet connections than this place seems to be. And agreed, it's Silicon Valley.
I don't know if it's a matter of the internet connection or just a matter of they don't have the crew to put it together.
According to the league, you're a team, you're supposed to. Why do you think they set fines if you don't have the streaming up like you should?
Well, you know, when you sign Maurice Purify, something's got to go on the budget, right? Sorry. My bad.
Do you think? And I know what you're thinking. You think now, but don't you see this somewhat as a conflict of interest? Possibly. Do you?
Depends on how they're going to use it.
Yeah, but my thought was that I don't know if they're going to be using it. I've asked around, and nobody knows if this TV stuff is going to be used on ESPN3. Plus, you know, you're bypassing the system completely for ESPN3. You are, if you go to SaberCats.tv, they have the streaming player there. If necessary, you can download a particular. See, this is what I don't get. If you have Android, if you're using Android, you can download this either browser enhancer or this other player, media player, and watch the game. I jokingly thought, oh, well, Fry's becoming the Jerry Jones of the AFL. I will do what I want to do when I want to do it. I will sign who I want to wear my stuff when I want them to sign, when I want them to wear it, et cetera, et cetera.
Meh. I don't know. None of us know anything about SaberCat TV.
No. And we wish we had. We really wish we
had.
I
wonder, as I'm sitting here and thinking about this.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is ultimately something that they're thinking about, knowing that the Arena Bowl may be played in Sacramento. Maybe this is a way to kind of keep.
I never thought about that. Huh. But then again, the game's on national TV. So it's sort of a moot point. But all the games, if the playoff games will be on national TV, whether they're going to be on CBS Sports Network or they're going to be on ESPN News.
Look, all right.
Now, no, but you brought up a very good point, though. You really did. So, one of the biggest things that came across the wire this week, this past weekend, was the announcements, Adam, of the finalists for the 2015 class of the Arena Football League.
Am I allowed to just come out and say I hate it?
Sure.
Okay, I hate it. I hate the list. Drives me nuts.
So it's not like last week when it came to the bye week where you hate it, you get it, but you hate it.
No, this I just hate.
Okay.
here's where I have the first fundamental problem. The group that voted on this list is not the same group who voted on this list last year. It's not the same group who voted on this list the year before.
No, it is not.
And last year, there were six people who did not get into the Hall of Fame who were finalists. I'm just going to use five because Chris Jackson's the sixth, and the reason that he had his eligibility revoked, he would have clearly been voted in as a member of the Hall of Fame, but he was revoked when he played in the National Conference title game last year for Arizona.
Right, so right now, technically, we have two guys who have been voted in that are in limbo.
Yeah, Jackson and Cleon Thomas.
Right. So,
the guys who were not voted in last year, who were finalists, were John Gregory, Jay Gruden as a coach, Andy Kelly, Bo Kelly,
right,
and Steve Papper. Now, to me, that means that this year, those should be the first five names on the list as finalists, unless you've got that many people who are eligible for the first time to join the Hall of Fame. Now, the list of new people who just became eligible who are Hall of Famers,
right,
include Mark Grebe,
yeah,
Kenny McIntyre, and Kevin Guy. And I'll even give you James Barron if you want to say he was technically that there's political stuff going on with that.
Good skirting.
This is the first year he was, for all intents and purposes, eligible for the Hall of Fame. So those are four new guys, and it's really only three new guys. But there are five names who should damn well be on the list. That means, I mean, where are they? Where is John Gregory on this list? John Gregory is not on this list, but don't worry. Guys who have been eligible, and I'm going to, again, throw out James Barron because that was a political thing.
Right.
BJ Cohn, Craig Bornemeyer, Sia Burley. Where were these guys? Will Pettis? Where were these guys on last year's list? Why were they not finalists last year? If they weren't finalists last year, theoretically, the guys who were finalists that didn't get in last year should be in front of these guys. This is just another prototypical, you know, Arena Football League BS oversight.
Right.
I mean, look, we could argue all day as to whether John Gregory deserves to be a finalist for the Hall of Fame, but the bottom line is the group of how many ever they were last year that picked them decided that he should be. What has he done in his career now that says he shouldn't be? I have a problem with that. Now, I have nothing against BJ Cohn, Will Pettis, none of those guys. I have nothing against them being finalists for the Hall of Fame. I have problems with them being finalists for the Hall of Fame when they weren't considered last year. By the way, I do have a problem with BJ Cohn being a Hall of Famer. I never thought BJ Cohn was a Predator for a long time.
Right.
I never looked at him as one of the best linemen in the league. So, it's not the Hall of Very Good, it's the Hall of Fame. Look, I don't think John Gregory should be a Hall of Famer. I don't really – you know, I think Bo Kelly probably should. And I think Andy Kelly has a good gripe. I don't really think that John Gregory necessarily should be a Hall of Famer, but if he was good enough last year, why is he not good enough to be on the list this year?
Oh, it's interesting. You know what? We should actually go back and check years past. Of all the ones that – is this the first –
Well, they've only been a couple years. This is the first time this has come up.
Yeah,
we've gone back and looked at this because remember the first year they did it was in 2000, I want to say 12, and they let all 10 in.
Yes, they did. Yeah, they're making up for years where.
So there were no holdovers that year, and then all the finalists from one of the years they let in like 7 of the 10, and all the guys came back from that.
Yeah.
So I, you know, if we're really at the point that BJ Cohn and Craig Bornemeyer, I understand that Bornemeyer was in the league for a long time, did football ops for a long time. A lot of people like him.
Yep.
Are there David Baker? I mean, come on.
We were able to talk to a couple of the people that were on the committee, and we do know at least Baker was brought up on one of the – how many people was it? 10 again?
10, yes.
So we know that Baker was brought up at least once. And you and I have been
– We know Baker was brought up at least twice.
Oh, it's twice. Okay, I only knew about one. Okay.
Yeah, I know somebody different who also put Baker on the list.
Okay.
So we know Baker was brought up twice. Look, Craig Bornemeyer might have been the greatest person on the face of the earth, but David Baker had more of an impact on the Arena Football League than he did. And again, BJ Cohn, I mean, I don't have a list in front of me of linemen who maybe should be in before BJ Cohn, but you can't find other, you know, Bo Kelly can't be on this list, but BJ Cohn can be. I have an issue with that. Now, Cohn's not going to get in, and neither is Bornemeyer, I don't think. If I had to guess this list, well, I guess we should just read the whole list.
Yeah, let's do that.
James Barron, Craig Bornemeyer, Sia Burley, BJ Cohn, Mark Grebe, Kevin Guy, Jay Grud, Kenny McIntyre, Steve Path, and Will Pettis. If I had to guess, Barron will get in, Grebe will get in, Gruden will get in, Guy will get in, and Kenny Mack will get in.
So Gruden will get in again.
I think he deserves to be.
Depends on how many, because last year it was only 4?
Well, but it would have been 5 if Chris Jackson
had. Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right.
So if we're going to stick with the 5, my 5 would be Barron, Grebe, Gruden, Guy, and Kenny Mack.
I can't argue with that.
I think next in line would be Steve Pappen.
I can't, and that would be it would be his third time being nominated for him to get.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back and put Kevin Guy in the Hall of Fame whenever you want. Especially as he's still coaching and still adding to his resume. And to tell you the truth, I don't think he should be on the ballot. I have no problem with him being in the Hall of Fame. I just have a problem with him being elected to the Hall of Fame when he's only coached as a head coach for 5 years in this league. So, or 6 years in this league, whatever it is. And he's not retired. Jay Gruden as a head coach becomes notable because of what he did. If you're going to put Kurt Warner in, Jay Gruden is the coach version.
Right.
And, by the way, Jay Gruden won 2 championships and still the only 2 championships Orlando's got.
It makes
he did what Perry Moss couldn't do.
And remember, the league that actually did state, which they've been good to do, what the rules are when it comes to players being eligible. And for head coaches, it's a maximum of – sorry, minimum. Minimum of
– 5 seasons.
Yeah. 5 seasons?
Coaches must have been active for a minimum of 5 seasons and need not be retired. I mean, that's why Kevin Guy's on it now, because now he's eligible.
Right.
And there's no arguing. He's going to go down as one of the greatest coaches in AFL history. And look, if you give me my option, would I rather have Kevin Guy now or John Gregory now? I'd absolutely rather put Kevin Guy in now. I don't think John Gregory should be in the Hall of Fame. But it's still the point that John Gregory and Bo Kelly, in my opinion, should be on this ballot.
Interesting. So what do you guys think? Podcast, SoundCloud guys, Meerkat, who do you think is the most deserving, and who do you think is the least deserving on that list? Let us know. There are multiple ways, and you know how. There is Facebook. There's Twitter. You can contact us through Instagram. There is SoundCloud, Meerkat. Everything is basically is /ArenaFan. There is our YouTube account also, which has had a minor change. You can just look us up by putting go to YouTube and go to ArenaFan Online. It's actually youtube.com/C/ArenaFan Online, and that's not us. That's how they set them up. But that's how you can get to our page too. Let us know, or go to the message boards. According, we had a real quick thing. According to Zachary, The most deserving is Kenny Mack, and the least deserving is Kevin Guy. What do you think, Adam? Agree? Disagree?
Yeah, James. And no slight on Kenny Mack. He's still one of the best DBs to ever play this game. James Barham was one of the best linemen ever.
Yeah.
As most deserving, least deserving, look, this is a Sabercat guy hating on Kevin Guy.
So
just think about that for a minute. No, no offense, Zach, but...
Questions from you, the fans, coming up right now, heading to that segment. We want to thank everybody for sending us questions. Adam, we did get a few on Twitter, which I'm going to mention right now. The earliest questions, I know I missed them last week, and I really apologize to everybody. I really do. Apologize for not getting or forgetting your questions. From David Hine, Adam. Based on their poor end-of-game red zone play calling,
wait.
Which coach is burning on the hot seat more, Andy Olson or Lawrence Samuels?
Ooh.
You didn't expect me to throw in Andy Olson, did you?
I think Andy Olson's on a hotter seat right now. I think they're both on hot seats. I think Andy Olson's on a hotter seat.
Okay.
But if we're really just talking about game management...
Right.
Okay, Lawrence Samuels' game management is the worst in the AFL. It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous how badly he butchered that game against Orlando last week. I mean, I wrote the article. I'm not going to rehash it again, but it was just so disastrous of clock management in a game that damn well should have been won.
And if you haven't seen it, head over to arenafan.com. I think it's still on the front page. If not, go to our writer's page, and then you can check for Adam, and it's right there.
But the reason that Olson's going to be on the hotter seat because Spokane has higher expectations than Tampa does, but Tampa Bay has lost so many of these games this year that they've lost twice against Orlando. That right there, there's two games against Orlando that they lost. That's the difference between them being in first place and last place.
Right.
You know, the game against Cleveland, they could have won that game against Cleveland back on April 24th. I guess the rest of their losses have been blowouts, but those two games against Orlando, inexcusable.
Now, I don't know if anybody happened to see the comment that was put on YouTube by the Storm, in particular to the infamous ending. You were there, Adam, to the ending to the Tampa Bay game. And I think everybody's going to talk about this thing, too. I don't know if you would call this an issue with clock management, but this may more or less be an issue of the refs. But in your opinion, did they get it wrong? Now, what people need to remember that there are different rules for replay when it comes to national TV games and ESPN/local games. Completely different rules for replay. Which I can understand. It's ludicrous, but I understand.
So you hate it, but you understand it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but let's reset this for those who didn't know what talking about.
Yeah.
The Storm were down 69-62 with 6 seconds left of the game. They had the ball in the Orlando 10-yard line. And they threw a pass over the middle that was caught by Julius Gregory on the 1-yard line, maybe about a half a yard away from the end zone. Inbounds, clock running. Storm had two timeouts in their pocket, and they didn't use them. Now, Lawrence Samuels is very clearly going down, you know, running down the sidelines trying to get a referee's attention to call timeout, but the refs did not grant him that timeout. So that's where we've gotten to where they were. The clock ran out. They lost by 7. Instead of having a shot to score on the last play of the game to potentially tie, potentially take the lead, depending upon whether they would have kicked the extra point or gone to.
Right. Oh. Yeah, it looked like it. Cause, you know what's funny is that originally it was supposed to be... What TV station was supposed to be doing the game?
Well, Bright House did do the game.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't promoted because it would have been a Tampa Bay broadcast, right?
It was a Tampa Bay broadcast.
It wasn't. I don't remember Bright House being about the Storm saying anything about this.
Bright House was there. I mean,
I know because when we were watching the ESPN feed, that's what they were showing, and you could hear Jack and Derek going on about being able to see the feed. That's what they were showing. Mm-hmm. So I just don't get it. If they have access to the truck, anyways.
I don't know. You know, you're.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what to tell you from that standpoint. So, did the refs get it wrong? Yes, they got it wrong. Is that why the Storm lost the game? Absolutely not. Lawrence Samuels is an idiot. That's why they lost the game.
Right.
Lawrence Samuels has no idea how to manage a clock. I don't care if he comes back and looks at this and tells me that, you know, they – and, yeah, Zach, you're right. The Storm got cheated out of that last play. Storm never should have been in that position. Storm blew it, and they blew it time and time again in that game. They blew it at the end of the first half. They blew it at the end of the game. They had a shot in the fourth quarter, take a two-score lead through a pick. Maybe the guy was out of the box. In fact, I know he was out of the box. But, you know, it was a horribly officiated game, but it was a horribly played game from Tampa's standpoint, and they should not have lost that game.
No. We had a question there before the Meerkat stream went down asking about Sacramento. Will the games be there in Sacramento? We don't know. We're just assuming so. Yeah, we're assuming so, and the reason being is because there's a full name for that. Barnum and Bailey. The Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus is going to be taking over the SAP Center the last 2 weeks. Basically, conference championship weekend and Arena Bowl weekend. So it has to be moved somewhere else. Everybody's talked about moving. Oh, let's move it to Spokane. Let's move it to
let's not move the game to Spokane.
Stockton. Move it to don't move it to Stockton. It only has all its 10,000 people, but then again, you never know. It's only an hour away. You can move it to, God forbid, to the Cow Palace.
No. I'm not going. I swear to you, they played a game at the Cow Palace, I'm not going.
And then there is the Oracle in Oakland, but there is something going on the Friday prior to Arena Bowl, unless they buy them out, which I don't see occurring. So it really just leaves the arena formerly known as the Arco Arena, Sleepy Time Arena. I think that's what it's called. Count Your Sheep Arena. So I think that's, yeah.
Play the game in Oakland, baby. Play the game at the O.co outside.
That would be interesting. I know it's not going to happen, but, you know.
Hey, they can have the Arena Bowl and the Super Bowl in the same place this year.
Oh, that would be interesting.
I don't think it'd be quite the same, would you?
No. Jordan Nichols asked us, Adam, and I think we mentioned earlier, but how many teams do we think that the league will have next season? Or 2017? Well, through 2017? ?
Oh, of the existing teams, how many of them are still going to be around through 17? Is that how we're interpreting
it? I don't know. I think he's just asking how many teams will be there next season.
I'm going to guess 10.
10?
This is my guess. I think it's going to be grim, but 10.
I think it's going to be more. I think it will either be status quo.
It ain't going to be these 12, I can tell you that.
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah, no, I know. Because I also didn't say it was going to be these 10 either.
That's true. Yeah, good point. Do a quick refresh for Facebook cues. I think we only got 4, if I'm not mistaken, right, Adam?
That's good. I haven't seen any of them, so this will be new to me, too.
Okay. Let's see here.
I'm playing a road game tonight. I'm podcasting from Leesburg.
That's so true. Yes.
A little off my game here. Being distracted by the crowd.
Like you're distracted by the almost getting hit by the footballs during your thing last week.
Well, that's just playing a game, man.
And for those of you who are listening or watching the Meerkat stream who are Jacksonville fans, Adam, Will, you're going to be in the house this week, aren't you?
Yep. Oh, God, that's going to be hell. That's going to be even worse with footballs after the game. because those fans come like right on the field and start chucking shit all over the place.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I'll be there for the game against Philadelphia. So yeah, but I'll be doing another post game show right after the game.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure we're gonna start literally like within 2 minutes after the end of the game.
Check out Meerkat. Wait, look at social media, you'll see it. We also have, by the way, if you don't have Meerkat or click on the link, we actually have it embedded now on our podcast page on Arena Fan. Just head over to the news section and go down to
never bothered to put on our front page today.
It's okay. It happens.
We're only two people.
So, but you can do that, and it's there. That's one thing we can tell you, that it's there. So you can always put it on that page once we announce it, and it will go live, and you don't have to change your browser in any way, shape, or form. So, let's see. Okay. Scott York, what was it about arena football that drew you to the sport and kept you interested for so long?
Okay.
Decent question.
Yeah. So we'll start with, it was cheap. At the time, it was really all my family could afford. I mean, we were still relatively new in Florida. We hadn't established our own business yet. And, you know, the whole family could go out for $50 easily. Parking, tickets, all that. It was a quirky little game. I wasn't much for the magic. I had the magic kind of dragged down my throat when I first came to Orlando, and, you know, I wasn't – Orlando really didn't have anything else. Solar Bears hadn't come around yet, so we kind of latched on to the Predators, and this was back in a day where 15,000 were at the old arena night in and night out. You couldn't think about getting tickets for a game day of the game for the most part. So, that's how it kind of got all started for me, and, you know, here I am 24 years later.
Wow.
I'm one of the most hated people in the AFL, no, I'm kidding.
For me, I didn't see my very first game until 1992. Went to the Knickerbocker Arena in Albany, New York to see the Albany Firebirds play the Miami Hooters. And for me, I was always been just a fan of niche, you know, sports that I thought was pretty cool. And to me, it was football. And I just followed it from there. I saw my first game late night on ESPN like everybody else did. And I've just loved the game for whatever reason. And I have for all these years also. I mean, I've been lucky to be a season ticket holder once in my lifetime for the Toronto Phantoms for the 2 years that they were in Toronto, and I made the trips. Even in those goddamn Thursday games. Oh, kill me. I think it's just the closeness that for me, keeping me interested, the closeness, the camaraderie. I wouldn't have met Adam. I wouldn't have met everybody. I wouldn't have joined Arena Fan.
You wouldn't know what a hand grenade is.
I wouldn't know what a hand grenade is, even though I had been in New Orleans prior. Yeah. So that's for me, I think, just something interesting that I loved, and that's what kept me into it. So, that's not a question there.
Yeah, please ask questions. Don't post statements when we ask for questions.
From Chris Arnold. I think we talked about it earlier. I don't think there's any more, but at least want to mention that he did ask us a question. Your impressions on the 10 finalists of the Hall of Fame, especially since we now have James Barron on the list, which, like you said, Adam, who should already be in.
I think we really touched base on it.
Just wanted to at least mention that we did, you know. We just see your question.
Chris Arnold is one of the best photographers in the AFL, for those of you who don't know. He's been around this game since the early, early 90s with the Storm.
Yeah. Okay. So, thanks again, guys. We'll send out some messages via social media, or you can send them early to us over on Twitter, whether it be myself or Adam. You know, I'm at Repacked. Adam is at AFL Guru, or send them to us via email. You know them. If not, ask us on the boards. If not on the boards, tim.capra@arenafan.com, adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. Just kind of keep thinking that not everybody visits the boards and listens to the podcast.
Why not?
Well, Saturday, week 17 starts on a Friday this week. Actually starts off with a game that could very easily be very bad based on how Spokane...
sucked.
They screwed the pooch in the first half, really, versus the LA Kiss. They had the three-time defending champion, Adam, coming to Spokane.
This should be a really fun game, and by a really fun game, I mean not a really fun game. Can you believe that Spokane's been held in the 20s four times this year? Now, granted, three of them have been against San Jose.
Yeah.
But, you know, this offense, I mean, they need something, and I don't know where they're going to get that something from. Because both Warren Smith and Arvell Nelson, again, were terrible last week.
Yeah, I think didn't Arvell start? No, Warren Smith started, I think.
Warren Smith started. He threw for 101 yards, went 8 of 19 passing with a pick, and then got hooked.
Right.
And they probably should have won that game. They probably should have won that game at the end of that.
I was trying to check real quick to see what Massey says about these games also. I don't have them up in front of me.
Massey says there is an possibility that Arizona's going to lose this game. Oh, I'm looking at the spreads this week. This should be fun.
Well, they're very similar. Massey's stuff is very similar to what they currently are.
So Arizona's favored by 15 this week.
That's it? And it's funny that we say that because, you know, we've had... You know, we've had two teams this year already favored.
Last week was a big week for underdogs.
Yeah. But it's funny. Both these teams that have been an underdog by 30 points also covered completely.
So, yeah, I mean, New Orleans covered against San Jose last week. Vegas covered against Arizona. Portland covered. Let's see. Portland. I need a calculator to figure out by how many points Portland covered. Portland covered by 37.5 points last week.
37.5 points.
That's how many points they beat the spread by.
Wow. Mine's not coming up here. Once it comes up, I'll mention it, unless you get it up first. Saturday, the national game of the week, because there is no ESPN game this week until it returns in week 18 for ESPN News. Orlando travels to the Cleveland Gladiators.
It's a pick'em game, and it should not be a pick'em game.
This was a flex game, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And by the way, one correction from last week. We mentioned that there had never been an ESPN flex game. That is completely wrong. There was an ESPN flex game last year, and it was Tampa somebody, and it ended up being Jacksonville Spokane. So ESPN has flex before.
So, anyway, okay. This game's lined as a pick-up. I don't know why. Orlando's playing well. Cleveland's playing not well. Orlando's going to remember that Cleveland came to town and beat the Predators by one.
Mm-hmm.
When these two teams met back in April. And to tell you the truth, that's the only good game Cleveland's played this year. Just looking at this. When you go back and look at what Cleveland has accomplished this year. The Gladiators have beaten Tampa, New Orleans, Tampa, Orlando, New Orleans, Las Vegas, and New Orleans. That's not very good.
No.
Orlando's at least beaten some teams. I think Orlando's going to kill Cleveland in this game. I don't think this is even going to be close.
Yeah, Orlando has, I mean, they are playing. They're playing well. Cleveland, I don't know. I'm agreeing with you in this
Cleveland's
one.
Playing like hell. Shane Austin's playing like hell, and there is no way. I mean, yeah, 72-56 says some stuff last week, but anybody who watched that game knows damn well. That game was 72-40 with less than 30 seconds to play.
Ugh. The next game on the docket is one that you're going to be attending, Adam, and I'm surprised this game is not on TV either. Philadelphia travels to play the Jacksonville Sharks, and this Jacksonville Sharks team, you got to admit, Adam, they had a bite taken out of them this past week when they went to quote-unquote snowy Portland and basically got their asses handed to them by the Portland Thunder.
We should have played back the tape when the first thing I said about that game was something along the lines of, can't you just see Jacksonville screwing the pooch in this game?
Yeah.
Let's see. How many points is Philly favored by in this game? Philly's favored by 5.5 in this game, and I think that's a joke, too. Philly has nothing to play for. I don't want to say they have nothing to play for. They have something very big to play for. They have the potential right to host the Arena Bowl to play for still. That said, I think Jacksonville's going to win this game. I think Jacksonville's going to bounce back and play a much better game against Philadelphia. They've already beaten Philadelphia this year. They can win the season series because they also got killed when they played up in Philadelphia back in week, whatever that was. That was week 3. They only lost by 11, but that game was one of those games that was significantly more lopsided than the peers. Dan Radwell is playing great football. He's the MVP right now of the league, clearly, but this is a really tough game. I understand that Philadelphia's had Jacksonville's number in these late season games, but I think Jacksonville is going to wake up, play to its potential, and send a real message in what, my estimation, is going to be the American Conference title game.
Check something here. Still trying to find this thing. This can be an interesting game. Jacksonville needs to win this game, obviously. I mean, yes, they're currently in the playoff race, as is. I think they're a 3-seed. I have to go back and check.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3-seed. This is still... Something will have to change. Something's going to have to change with this team because, as I said, a lot of the players, too, admitted it, too, in their post-game stuff. They got their asses handed them, so... I'm going Philly on this one, too. I really, really am. Let me see. Here it is. Okay. Yeah, the lowest thing we talked about Spokane before. Massey has him winning, having a 22% chance at winning. Would you believe, Adam? And you would disagree with this one. They actually have Cleveland at winning at 53%.
They're crazy.
53% compared to 46. And the next game on the docket, Tampa Bay travels to New Orleans, and this is what we mentioned before, who anybody who wasn't listening, that New Orleans has made it known that somebody has donated approximately 4,000 seats, and they're all free. So it depends on, did it say where to pick them up? Box office? The local Albertsons? Piggly Wiggly? Winn-Dixie? Yeah.
You went there.
I did. Do we even need to go over this game, or is Tampa just going to come in?
I think Tampa's going to drop a friggin' egg in this game. I think they're going to lose this game. They're favored by 7.5, and I think they're going to lose this game. I said this when Tampa got beat by Orlando back on May 16th in that game that again, they were winning by a billion points. They should have won. I said, that's the type of loss that you feel for a while. And what did they do the next week? They lost 71-27 at home to Philadelphia.
Right.
Now, and by the way, the week after that, they only beat this New Orleans team at home by a single point and should have lost that game. And Tampa hasn't been the same since then. Yeah, they beat Jacksonville, they beat Cleveland. But aside from that, they really haven't looked good. I am pretty certain that Tampa is going to come out in this game and look like hell. And if they look like hell, New Orleans can beat them. I think the New Orleans Voodoo were going to win their last ever home game. Boom.
Wow.
It's all they have left to play for.
Yeah. Check the tape. Keep the tape. Las Vegas. Los Angeles.
Who cares?
L.A.
Yeah, I guess by definition this is an important game, right?
L.A. L.A. I've no hesitation. I've no hesitation saying L.A.
L.A.'s favored by 2.5. It basically is a playoff game for L.A. They lose this game, they're probably not going to get in the playoffs. I don't know. Sure, L.A., I guess.
Massey has it at a 50-49 clip. 50 for Los Angeles.
50-49? 50. What's the other
I don't know. The other, I guess they rounded it up.
Games can't end in ties, Massey. Spread's only 2.5, so.
The last game on the docket for the premiere episode of Sabercats.TV.
We guessed.
And which it is, I think this is the third lowest percentage of a chance of winning that Massey has given this year. Portland travels to San Jose, and Massey says that they have a 3% chance of winning this game.
Portland's getting 28 in this game, and I'm going to take the 28, but they're not winning this game.
No.
I think they can stick with the 20, but they're not winning this game. Again, I mentioned this before when we talked about Portland. San Jose cannot afford to putz around in any of these games. San Jose, at minimum, has to finish 16-2. And, you know, even if they get beat by Arizona at home next week, it's not the end of the world as long as they don't lose by more than, I think it's 18 points.
Right.
And they still keep the tiebreaker. But if they lose any of these games that they shouldn't lose the rest of the way and lose that game, all of a sudden, all this work that they've done to get to 14-1 doesn't mean a damn thing. They still have to go to Arizona.
Right. So, small percent of chance of winning, and I think for me it's still San Jose too. Hey, here's a quick question we can look more or less down the lines too, though, Adam. What do you think of this? At what point do these teams, do they think of resting their starting QBs as an example?
You can't. I mean, you just can't. Philadelphia, San Jose, Arizona, they all want to be the number one seed. They all want to host the Arena Bowl. That's too important.
Right.
So at what point when you can't be that number one seed anymore, that's when, you know, if Philadelphia loses this week, I could see Radovan not playing in the last game of the year.
He has the streak going. He'll stay. He has his Iron Man.
He plays a half football and then goes.
Yeah, yeah. But remember, San Jose does have Nathan Stanley.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever.
But I'm saying that it would give San Jose the opportunity, if they wanted to make sure that Myers stayed healthy. But mind you, again, we're only in week 17.
You cannot bench someone this early. You can't.
No, I agree. So.
Now, keep in mind, Eric Meyer was in that voodoo game last week all the way through.
Which made no sense.
That was friggin' stupid. So.
Thank you guys for coming this week, and obviously before we leave, it's a show tradition, Adam. Last words.
The hell am I supposed to British Open, I guess?
Well, you were wrong about Wimbledon.
I was wrong about Wimbledon.
Yeah. Well, women's side. Women's side, you were wrong.
Yeah, I was definitely wrong on the women's side. No, I had the right side on the men's side. But, I don't know, British Open? I don't know shit about golf.
Yeah.
Speed's really good.
How about this? Not
Rory McIlroy.
Not Tiger.
Tiger's got a better shot of winning than Rory McIlroy does.
Well, obviously, when you don't show up because you're injured.
I can't name 10 golfers right now.
How about mini putt?
That's not really a sport. I'll go with Jason Day.
I will go with a European player. All right, guys. Thank you very much for joining us this week. For the Meerkat people, we apologize for what occurred. Hope we can get to figure out what happened. So for everybody here at AFL tonight, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound. Off the net.